I want to read these verses to you tonight to set the background. And I'll tell you right up front that we'll do an introduction to the message that is rather long, because you have to understand what that's about. And then the 5 points at the end are brief. They're almost standalone application points there. But they're all based on this chapter, Daniel chapter 6, as I read from the New Living Translation. Darius the Mede decided to divide the kingdom into 120 provinces, and he appointed a high officer to rule over each province. The king also chose Daniel and two other as administrators to supervise the high officers and protect the king's interests. So here we have 120, then over these 120, three, Daniel being one of them. Excuse me. Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all the other administrators and high officers. Because of Daniel's great ability, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. When then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs, but they couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn. He was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. Isn't that a powerful verse? So they concluded, our only chance of finding grounds for accusing Daniel will be in connection with the rules of his religion. So the administrators and high officers went to the king and said, long live King Darius. We are all in agreement, we administrators, officials, high officers, advisors, and governors, that the king should make a law that will be strictly enforced. Give orders that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions. And now, your majesty, issue and sign this law so it cannot be changed, an official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked. So, this is my translation, King Darius fell for it and signed the law. But when Daniel learned that the law had been signed, he went home, knelt down as usual in his upstairs room with his window open toward Jerusalem. He prayed 3 times a day, just as he'd always done, giving thanks to his God. Then the officials went together to Daniel's house and found him praying and asking for God's help. That certainly wasn't accidental, was it? So they went straight to the king and reminded him about the law. His law. Did you not sign a law that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions? Yes, the king replied, that decision stands. He still doesn't know what's going on yet. It's an official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked. Then they told the king, that man Daniel, one of the captives from Judah, is ignoring you and your laws. He still prays to his God 3 times a day. Now the king knew he was in his own trap. Hearing this, the king was deeply troubled, and he tried to think of a way to save Daniel. He spent the rest of the day looking for a way to get Daniel out of this predicament. Here's these enemies again. In the evening, the men went together to the king and said, your majesty, you know that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no law that the king signs can be changed. So at last, the king gave orders for Daniel to be arrested and thrown into the den of lions. The king said to him, may your God, whom you serve so faithfully, rescue you. A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. The king sealed the stone with his own royal seal and the seals of his own nobles, so that no one could rescue Daniel. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night fasting. He refused his usual entertainment and couldn't sleep at all that night. Very early in the next morning, the king got up and hurried out to the lion's den. When he got there, he called out in anguish, Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God, whom you serve so faithfully, able to rescue you from the lions? Daniel answered, long live the king. My God sent his angel to shut the lion's mouth so that they would not hurt me, for I have been found innocent in his sight, and I have not wronged you, your majesty. The king was overjoyed, and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. Not a scratch was found on him, for he had trusted in his God. Then the king gave orders to arrest the men who had maliciously accused Daniel. This was the custom in the Near East. If you accuse somebody of something, the punishment that they would have gotten if they were innocent, you got the punishment for them. So you better be careful in your charges, and we're going to see how this came back to bite these guys. Bite them literally. He had them thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. The lions leaped on them and tore them apart before they even hit the floor of the den. Then King Darius sent this message to the people of every race and nation and language throughout the world. Peace and prosperity to you. I decree that everyone throughout my kingdom shall tremble with fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he will endure forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed, and his rule will never end. He rescues and saves his people. He performs miraculous signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. The story of Daniel in the lion's den, I put in your notes here, is one of the best known and the best loved stories in the entire Bible. It's familiar almost to everyone. Little children love it. Sunday school teachers love to tell it. Adults love to hear it. The book of Daniel literally in these first six chapters tells us how to live for God in a hostile environment. That's why it's so applicable to us tonight. There's an old saying that says you can tell a lot about a person by the quality of enemies that he has. Daniel must have been a good man because he had the right kind of enemies. Rascals they were. Hated him. Hated his God. The people who hated him were no friends of God. They came after his faith because they could find no fault in him as far as his character, and they had no answer for what he believed. Now, before we jump right into this, remember a couple of things. Daniel's now a very old man. No one knows how old for sure, probably 85 at the least. He had come to Babylon as a teenager. Remember when he had been carried into captivity? All of his adult life, he had spent serving courts of various pagan rulers. Steve told us about that in Sunday school this morning. He had not given up, he had not given out, and he had not given in his commitment to the Lord in responsible positions all through all of those pagan rulers. He had been steadfast in his service as living in a pagan land without complaint or compromise. And now he's over 80 years old, and he is serving under a new king by the name of Darius, who rules over a new kingdom, the Medo-Persian kingdom. The names have changed, but the spiritual challenge is the same. Will Daniel remain faithful when the pressure is on? First thing I want you to see is the king's decree. As the chapter opens, Daniel is once again promoted to a high office. He'd been in high office all of this time, but this is probably the highest that he has been in all five of these kings. Evidently, Darius recognized him as a man of integrity and wanted to make him second in command over the entire kingdom. And that's when the intrigue begins. Our pastor shared this morning, cream rises to the top. And this is what's happening here in the life of Daniel. And the jealous administration, keep in mind we said there was three men over 120 men, and these 120 men were over all of their different counties in our language of today. And when they found out that Daniel was about to be appointed over all of them, these two guys and all of the others combined, they went looking for a charge, something that they could find to accuse him of, something that would disqualify him, something that would discredit him in the eyes of the king, who might rethink his position on how highly he thought of Daniel. Now, this is what his enemies discovered when they examined his life, and this is in your notes as well. First of all, he was faithful in his duties. Faithful in his duties. Secondly, he was faultless in his character. And thirdly, he was fervent in his prayers. These are the three marks of godliness that even unbelievers could see. And I maintain that unbelievers today can see those same qualities when they're evident in the life of God's people. The people who watch you and me can tell if we work hard at our job. They know what kind of character we have, and if they watch long enough, they will learn whether or not we are men and women of prayer. Whatever is in our heart will come out sooner or later, and people who don't know the Lord will know the truth about us. In Daniel's case, even his enemies had to admit that he had no glaring weaknesses. No finer things could be said than for your enemies to admit that they have nothing that they can find wrong with you. Isn't that a wonderful thing? When even the people that don't like you say, I don't like him, but I cannot find anything wrong with him. Horace Greeley had this statement. He said, fame is a vapor, popularity an accident, riches take wings. Those who cheer today may curse tomorrow. Only one thing endures, character. Now, here's something that I want to establish right at the beginning here. Doing right is no guarantee everything will go right. Sometimes we have this little idea that comes from a misconception, and sometimes it's even fostered by us preachers, that if you do right, everything will turn out right. You do right, everybody will admire you. You do right, everybody will think you're the greatest thing since wings on a bird. No, not true. Daniel was hated because he was a man of faithfulness, a man that was fervent, and a man that was faultless in regards to his personal life. Sometimes we have the idea that if we are all of these things, we won't have the trials and the temptations why do we have them? One man was complaining to his pastor about that very thing. He said, I'm trying to do everything right, but yet I'm experiencing a deep valley. Why is God allowing this to happen? And his pastor's wise answer surprised him. He said to him, God wants to teach you that even when you do everything right, you still have to trust in God. Doing right, the pastor said, is no guarantee everything will go right. And I just want you to remember that tonight, so that sometimes you think, well, it doesn't pay to serve Jesus. Oh, yes, it does. But don't serve Jesus if you think it's going to bring you a life of ease in this life, because that's certainly not the case. Let's just suppose, for example, I'm amazed that all of these individuals could find nothing. Don't you think they searched everything? They talked to everybody. They talked to the previous individuals that had been under Daniel in the previous reigns, and they could find nothing about him. Let me ask you this. Suppose somebody hired a private investigator to look into every aspect of your life, public and private, past and present. You with me? Suppose somebody hired a private investigator to look into every aspect of your life going back for years and years. They would look into your high school and your college records. They would check how you treat your children. They would look at your phone calls, the public ones and the private ones. They would check out your shopping habits. They would look at your internet usage, what you watch and on your tube. They would check your financial records. They would look at your favorite TV programs. They would find out what you do on vacation and where you go on vacation. They would check out what video rentals you have. Every relationship. They would look at your tax returns, your cell phone usage, what you text to others, every corner of your bedroom, all of your business deals, your police record, how you act on the job, how you deal with the opposite sex, your vocabulary at home and at work. They would check out the jokes you tell, how you treat your spouse, places you visit when you are all alone. Could any of us survive that kind of scrutiny and have not something somewhere, sometime somebody say, oh yeah, look at that right there. That's incriminating. Could anybody survive that kind of scrutiny? Daniel did. We cannot find anything to accuse this man whatsoever unless we find it with his faith. But Daniel did have one flaw. Daniel did have one flaw. He was utterly predictable in his daily prayers. utterly predictable. He prayed every day at the same time in the same way so that his enemies realized if they could find out something, if they could come up with some crazy idea to get him regarding his praying to his God, they would have him because he always did that every day, three times a day. So they came up with their little trap. And they went to the king. Isn't it amazing how we lose all perspective when people compliment us or flatter us? Sometimes we just buy it hook, line, and sinker. It's one thing, like I say, to compliment others. It's a godly thing. It's a good thing. The Bible says encourage one another. But don't ever get into the practice of flattering anybody because that's a deceitful aspect. It's telling a lie to gain the favor of another. And here we find that they went to the king and said, we've got an idea. You're a magnificent man. Man, we haven't had a king like you in years and years and years and years and years and years. You know what you ought to do since you're such a high and mighty and respected individual? You ought to make a rule that nobody gets to pray to any god at any time for the next 30 days. You get to be God. And Darius, who was a fairly good man, pagan, boy, that he just puffed up like a poison toad. Here's all of his chief advisors, and they're standing there, and they're saying, you deserve this. You deserve this. And he said, I think you're right. Where do I sign? They already had it drawn up. Where do I sign? And he signed, anybody who worships any other god at any time, for any reason, any place, anywhere, anyhow, for the next 30 days, into the lion's den. Wow. That's the king's decree. So in a sense, here's the point. Daniel was a victim of his own integrity. You may at times, believe it or not, be a victim of your own integrity. People may use your own integrity against you in a manner that you can't even hardly imagine. So that was the king's decree. Number two, the prophet's devotion in the midst of the king's decree. So what do you do when you discover that your enemies have passed a law aimed at one person and you are that one person? It's like walking around with a big bullseye painted on your chest and on your back. How do you respond at that point tells a great deal about your character. And here, look in verse 10, and you're going to see Daniel's character. Man, I love this. I'm in Ezekiel. No wonder it doesn't look familiar. Over here in Daniel chapter 10. Right up here. But when Daniel learned about the law that had been signed, he just trembled all over. He thought, good goodness, what am I going to do now? I'm a dead duck. No. When Daniel learned that the law had been signed, he went home and knelt down as usual in his upstairs room with his window open toward Jerusalem. He prayed three times a day, just as he had always done, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Did you notice that phrase? For perhaps 85 years, I'm going to use 85 because some people say he was 92, 95. So from the time he was youth, for perhaps 85 years, Daniel had prayed three times a day. Stay with me on now. It's a little math. Let's just pick out three times arbitrarily. 7 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 5 o'clock. 7 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 5 o'clock, morning, noon, and night, morning, noon, and night, every day, 7 days a week, decade after decade, 85 years. Now, I like numbers. I did the math on that. How many times would Daniel have prayed if he prayed three times a day for 85 years? The answer comes out, I didn't put down the last two numbers. I think it's 93,240. I just put down over 93,000 prayers. 93,000 times Daniel had offered up his prayers to the Lord. No wonder he went back to the room and started praying. An 85-year-old habit's hard to break. 85 years, three times a day. And he did this knowing full well that his adversaries would catch him. He had the window open to Jerusalem. It wasn't like he thought, oh, I hope they don't find me. Hope they don't know about this. No, no. He did this in full defiance of man's laws because he was committed to keeping God's word. I just did a little math. At E3, we have approximately 150 people, I think, somewhere around there who attend each Sunday. Sometimes more, sometimes less. Suppose each of us decided to pray 3 times a day. That would total over, in a year, 164,000 prayers offered on a regular basis. Can you imagine that? A single church, 164,000 prayers if we all prayed 3 times a day. Some of us, I think, pray more often than that. But even if we just prayed 3 times a day. And some people say, well, yeah, Daniel. I'm not a Daniel. I don't have time for that. Keep in mind, he's one of the 3 top administrators of millions of people. This guy is not a monk. He's not sitting in an office reading the Bible. He's got administrative duties. He's got secular duties. He's got people coming to him for advice, individuals. He's giving orders, receiving data all the time. This guy is busier than any of us. And yet, 3 times a day. You know why I think he kept that established 3 times a day? You know why prayer was so important to him? Because I think Daniel realized that if you don't keep schedule on something, it's easy for it to get crowded out. Something else can come up so easy. Something that's so attractive. Something that just absorbs your attention that you get distracted. We get diluted down. We just get diverted from what we're after. But Daniel had these times, 12, 7, 5, 5, 7, 12, always praying. And I don't think it was just a little now I lay me down to sleep before he took a nap. I think these were fervent prayers for the kingdom and fervent prayers that God would use him and fervent prayers for God's kingdom to be advanced in this pagan land. Let me tell you something. Prayer was so important to him. Here's the thing that this says to me when he went home and opened the windows. Prayer was so important to him that he was willing to die rather than give up his right to talk to God. Think about that kind of commitment. This man's willing to die rather than not to be able to talk to his God. Oh, if you stop praying, I can tell you something. The world will stop bothering you. There's some immediate payoffs to stop praying and not being faithful. The lions won't come near you at work. Your family and friends will think you're normal again. Your boss will think you're one of the good boys. You see, the lions win when we are silent. The great mark of true faith is that we just keep on praying. That's why I titled this The Real Lion's Den. The real lion's den, I maintain, was not down there at the bottom of this cage. The real lion's den was in Daniel's upper chamber where he prayed 3 times a day. That's why he was able to stand. That's why he was able to live like he lived, to be the man that he was. That's why God saw that he could bless him, because he won the battle for God in his prayer den before he ever went to the lion's den. That's why David was able to face Goliath with a sling. Goliath was no challenge to him. He said, man, I killed a lion and a bear when there was nobody else around but me and God. Guess I can handle this guy. He's not, I don't know. I think I'd rather take on a big guy than a lion or a bear. He said, I can handle this. He was faithful in private so he could do his exploits in public. Well, notice Daniel's 3 did-nots. His 3 did-nots. First of all, he did not try to escape the consequences of his decision to obey God. He didn't say, I'm sorry, I knew better. I knew you guys would catch me. Please, don't tell the king. would they have not told the king? Please don't have me thrown in the lion's den. No. He did not try to escape the consequences of his decision. Secondly, he did not know what would happen. He had a pretty good idea what would happen, but he had no idea he was going to be delivered. If you think he knew that ahead of time that God was going to close the mouth of those lions, you're mistaken. It's just like in Daniel chapter 3, where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego stood before the king, and they said, "We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know. We know God's able to deliver us if he chooses, but if he doesn't, we're not going to bow down to you anyhow, because there's only one God." Do we have that kind of faith? I'm telling you, friends, in love, we may need that kind of faith. Christians are going to be persecuted more and more and more for their faith, and those that are weak in their faith are going to end up saving their own hides at the expense of their own soul. He did not know what would happen. Thirdly, he did not make a deal with God to try to save him. It's evident Daniel was not afraid to die. I'm sure he hoped that God would rescue him, but he could not be sure until that moment came. I do not doubt that he had some anxiety when they took him in, when they took him and threw him into that pit. If you don't think when they tied up his hands and bailed him into that thing, if you don't think his heart wasn't beating to match his age, you're wrong. That's a scary experience. He could hear him down there growling and breathing in the dark. It was dark down. Every now and then you see a picture of Daniel with a little window shining. Yeah, have you ever seen that picture of Daniel with that little window? That's not the way it was. There was a lion's den underground in the dark where they threw food in from above. The only light that came was where they threw the food in, and that's now sealed with a stone. Don't think his heart wasn't beating a mile a minute when they chucked him down in there. He landed down there in that muddy, slimy, stinky, smelly place with cats smell bad enough. I mean, I have to tell you, I'm not a cat lover. If you are, that's fine with me. These are big cats and lots of them. Can you imagine what's the smell is in that place down there? Dank and dirty and odorous. And there he is down there. Oh, he did not try to make a deal with God and saying, "Please, I don't want to go down there." I want you to see number three now, and then we'll make these applications here in the next 7 minutes and close. The Lord's deliverance. We've seen the king's decree, the prophet's devotion. I want you to see the Lord's deliverance. It was Dietrich Bonhoeffer who said, "When Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die." It was Dr. Martin Luther King who said, "If a man hasn't discovered something that he will die for, he isn't fit to live." That's quite a statement. If you haven't discovered something or someone you're willing to die for, you are not fit to live. That's powerful, isn't it? That's personal. It's challenging. Notice the king's deliverance. That night, the king didn't sleep well. And I don't know if Daniel did either. I've read these little Candyland stories where they say, "Oh, Daniel just walked over and he's told one of those lions, lay down there, put his head on that lion, and he went sound asleep." I doubt that. I really do. I think that's an embellishment that we have to be careful of. It's fantasy land and fairy land. When you're in a den with 20, 30, I don't know how many there was. There had to be a bunch of them. And when you're down there and you hear those things roar, and you can smell their foul breath, I don't think that's any place where you're piously religious. I doubt that he said, "Come over here, lay down here. I need a pillow." Now, I want to tell you something else. I don't think he stood there in stark terror either. I don't think he was biting his nails to the quick like some people do that my wife knows very well. I don't think he was down there just every moment. Just have you ever been in a dark place where you just wondered what was going to come? I tracked a mountain lion into a cave one time years ago hunting, elk hunting. And these were these big tracks, and they went right into this cave. And I thought, "I'm going to get myself a lion, mountain lion." And I had my gun ready, 30-06. I'm walking into that cave, and it's getting darker and darker and darker. And all at once, I can't see anything. And I thought, the hair then started to stand right up in the back of my neck. Because I always had in my mind, I'll see him and I'll shoot him. But I thought to my mind, if that thing had come barreling out of the dark, he would have me before I could even get my gun up. And I just remember all at once the hunter thought, maybe I'm now the hunted. And I remember just walking out of there thinking, come and get me, come and get me. Because, man, I just was frightened out of my wits. I don't think Daniel was frightened out of his wits. Isn't it interesting that, I do think this, I think Daniel in the lion's den slept better than the king in his palace. Isn't that something? When you have Jesus with you, your circumstances really don't matter if you have peace in your heart. You can put up with a lot of inconvenience, a lot of sacrificial living, just like Emma's going to be doing. You can tolerate that and even have joy in the midst of it because you have a higher mission. Daniel was down there on a divine assignment, and God's hand was with him. Actually, rather than Daniel in the lion's den, the lions were in Daniel's den. He just said, this is where I am. God put me here. This is not a very pleasant place. But the Bible says an angel of the Lord came. He testified, an angel of the Lord came and shut the lion's mouth. Now let's go real quickly for these last 5 minutes. Let's go real quickly for what are the lessons that we can learn from this? It's more than just an enchanting story. It has so many personal applications, just like the message this morning did. It has so many personal applications for modern day Daniels. Let's wrap this up by looking at five of them quickly. First of all, it is possible to live pure and godly in the midst of a thoroughly pagan world. Joseph did. Pastor is revealing that to us as he from the Bible as he shares that series on Joseph. It is possible to live a pure and godly life. Don't ever think that you are in such a bad job, in such a bad place, that you have so many ungodly friends that you just cannot live for Jesus because nobody could live for Jesus in that situation. That's a lie of the devil. You may be in a bad situation. You may have ungodly people that mock you and have a great time tormenting you. But I want to tell you, these men, Daniel and Joseph, and we could go through so many others, David, you can live a pure and godly life in the midst of a thoroughly pagan world. And sometimes we have to get past this idea of our complaining. What do we expect? We are temporary travelers here making our way to a city whose builder and ruler is God, and the people, the sinful people of the world, are going to make it hard. Did not Jesus say, in the world you will have tribulation? But be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. Number two, Christians who live for God should expect opposition. Expect it. Don't be surprised by it. Don't look like I cannot believe this happened to me. Yeah, you can. Because you're going to have opposition if you stand for Jesus. Daniel had his share of it, and he lived a godly life. If you live for the Lord sooner or later, and probably sooner, I can tell you trouble's going to come your way. This is part of what Jesus meant when he spoke about take up your cross daily. Every day, remember who died for you. Every day, remember that you died to all of the things that those who are tormenting you or poking fun at you are, they're living for now. You died to those things when Jesus came into your heart. You just need to reaffirm it. Here's a big one, number three. God can use us to touch unlikely people. This is so much like Pastor's message this morning. God can use us to touch unlikely people when we are faithful to Him. Daniel chapter 6 emphasizes the powerful effect that Daniel's personal integrity had on Darius. While it is true that many of his colleagues envied Daniel and plotted to kill him, it's also true that he made a huge impact for good on the mightiest man in the world. Can I tell you, you never know besides God who is watching you. This story teaches us that not every unbeliever hates Christ. Sometimes we get the idea, nobody's interested in Jesus. Everybody hates me. Nobody wants to hear the gospel. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. Not everybody will respond to it, but you have no idea, and neither do I, that not all unbelievers are not anxious to hear something for the deepest need of their life. For every satrap out there planning your downfall, there is a Darius keeping an eye on you, hoping that your faith is genuine because he might want that very God that you're serving. Don't ever forget that. They might have very little faith or no faith, but even though they may never say so, they're cheering you on because they hope that what you believe turns out to be true because they don't have anything that grips them like your faith grips you. I told you before, I made so much fun of a kid in my high school class. So much fun. I ridiculed him. I scorned him. I called him names. I'm so ashamed. I was not a Christian. And I just ridiculed him all the time. And you know why? Because he was a Christian. And I would make fun of him to no end. But every time I was mocking him and leading others to make fun of him, he was a good athlete, so we played on the same team in football and basketball. But every time I was making fun of him, I kept in my mind thinking, you're a bigger person than I am, even though I was scornful of him. You do not know. And he impressed me. I've told you about it before. He later became a Lutheran pastor. And when we met up years later, we fell into one another's arms, and I called him by name. I said, I'm so sorry for the way I treated you. So sorry. And he said, it's okay. I always thought you might amount to something. Some Darius has his eye on you right now. You believe that? That Darius might be another teenager, you teenagers. That Darius might be the honoriest, most filthy-mouthed, filthy-minded man or woman at work. Some Darius has their eye on you. And though they might be mocking you, they're cheering for you. They're wondering if you can take it. They're wondering, is your God real? Because if he's as real as what he appears to me to be to you, someday I want to know that because I don't have him. Number four, God is able to deliver his people from any danger they face. If God can deliver the lions from Daniel, and if God can deliver Daniel from the lions, he can deliver you. Now, I do want to make this one caveat in here. He might deliver you through death. You might not be spared. I might not be spared. But nobody's going to snatch us out of our Father's hands. Nobody's going to take our soul from God because he said, don't even think about that. You're mine. So God's able to save us, whether through life or death. And number five, God is always able to deliver in his own time, in his own way. God always delivers in his own time, in his own way. So I'm just telling you tonight, the same God who was with Joseph, that same God that was with Daniel, that's your God. That's mine. He's able. He is able. Let's serve him faithfully in a filthy world. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for old Joseph that our pastor is telling us about. And I thank you for old Daniel. Never batted an eye. You're going to the lion's den. Really? Well, God is God in my life, and I would rather die than not to be able to pray to Him. Lord, give us a faith like that, I pray in Jesus' name. Seal these words to our hearts.